Welcome to Today on Broadway for Friday, December 9th, 2016. I'm Broadway World's Matt Tamanini.
And I am Broadway Star's James Marino.
James, before we get started, we want to congratulate Jasmine Cephas-Jones, who took her final bow as Mariah Reynolds and Peggy in Hamilton last night at the Richard Rogers Theater. She has been a part of the show's cast for 2 years, dating back to before the Public Theater run. I don't know what her next project will be, but if you need more Cephas-Jones in your life, her dad, Ron, is on like pretty much every TV show out there right now. He's on This Is Us, the Netflix shows The Get Down and Luke Cage, which I'm currently binging through right now. As well as being a series regular on the first season or so of Mr. Robot. So congratulations to Ron for having a great career, but so much so to Jasmine, who has become a really vibrant part of the theater community during her run in Hamilton. And I'm excited to see what happens next with her career.
Yeah, very exciting. My wife is really hot on the television show This Is Us. You know, she just said that the Thanksgiving episode was something, huh?
Don't spoil it. I'm a few episodes behind, but she knows Ron Cephas-Jones very well. Then he plays Sterling K. Brown's biological father, who he didn't know until fairly recently. So great actor, very, very good actor.
Yeah, great, great opening scenes with him as well. All right, so Hairspray Live is NBC's lowest-rated live musical. That's a very limited set there, isn't there?
It is. That's only 4 years. But I'll be honest with you, James, even with this kind of limited sample size, this surprised me. Given the big names involved and the heavy advertising and social media presence that NBC gave the broadcast, I was expecting it to do fairly well. While Hairspray Live's 9 million viewers was more than enough to win the night for the network, it was more than 2.5 million viewers short of last year's Wiz Live and is 200,000 behind Peter Pan Live, which was the previous, you know, ranking of the lowest rated NBC live musical. Obviously, The Sound of Music Live, which did about 18.5 million, is still the heavyweight undisputed champion of all live musicals. By comparison, Grease Live, which aired on Fox, pulled in 12 million viewers back in January, so a fairly stark 3 million viewer difference there. Some are noting that the move from Thursday nights, which is where NBC had aired their musicals in the previous 3 years, to Wednesday night this year might have had an impact on the numbers, but that doesn't seem like a 2.5 million viewer drop kind of thing for me. Now, it does bear mentioning that while you always want live audiences to watch these live events while they're happening, television viewing has changed dramatically over the years, and even just since 2013, when The Sound of Music Live kicked off this whole live musical era. More people watch on DVR or on demand. More people cut cords and stream through some sort of internet-connected device. So many more people just purchase the content that they want from iTunes or Amazon or wherever else. So these numbers will probably tick up when you start figuring in DVR ratings, which is either the live plus 3 or live plus 7 or whatever else they figure in. NBC understands all this, so the traditional Nielsen ratings are by no means the be-all and end-all when it comes to ratings, but this still isn't great. You know, to me, James, the issue is just that outside of our theater circles and fans of cult 80s films, Hairspray, I don't think is a, you know, well-known and beloved property as much as it is for us. In fact, I was thinking about it today. I don't know that there are many musicals that would draw large numbers just on the strength of their title alone. Obviously, The Sound of Music and Grease would be towards, if not at the top of that list, and that's why they were two of the first ones done. Maybe The Wizard of Oz. I think that if ABC were to do live-action versions of some of the Disney's animated musicals, that those would be big hits. But when the big screen division of Disney is already prepping all of those for live-action remakes, I don't see ABC getting any of them anytime soon. So I'm just really kind of struggling to think, man, I don't know that Bye Bye Birdie is going to draw people, and I don't really know what they could do to really make a difference. I don't know what the answer is to this problem. You almost just have to hope for the best, catch lightning in a bottle. NBC invested a ton of money in Hairspray, and I think from a quality standpoint, it was well worth it. But for numbers like this, I don't know how often they're going to be willing to do this in the future. James, I know you just got back from the theater, so I didn't prep you for this, but can you think of any musicals that just on their name alone, casting aside would capture the interest of audiences outside of the spheres that you and I normally live and travel in?
Hamilton.
Well, you know, obviously that's not going to happen, but
I'm kidding. You know, of course.
But what I was going to say is I thought about what if, you know, In the Heights, what if to capitalize on the Hamilton thing, what if In the Heights got on there? Well, that's being prepped for a big screen version as well. Then I thought maybe Bring It On, the musical, which has the Lin-Manuel Miranda connection, is a well-known property, but that's not exactly the – I mean, I love the show, to be honest with you. I've seen it. I saw the world premiere out-of-town tryout in Atlanta. I've seen two different regional productions. I really enjoy the show, but I don't know if that's exactly the bastion of Broadway artistic greatness that we're going to put on TV. So I don't know. I'm not sure what it could be. Maybe Mary Poppins, even though they're, you know, Disney's doing the sequel. I just don't know.
Maybe if they did Phantom. You know, that might, or Cats or something like that. You know, some of the big major mega musicals. But I think that we have to stop thinking along those lines. I think that these numbers, 9 million, 12 million, are still enormous numbers. And if NBC does it once a year, it's sort of like CBS when everybody talks about why CBS keep carrying the Tony Awards. Because it's a really attractive, lucrative market of wealthy people with disposable income that are interested in this type of thing. So maybe this will be NBC's Tony Awards type of thing, or some of the other things out there. I think, you know, Fran and Barry Weissler have the formula perfect on Broadway. They have to bring it to television, or it's, you know, somebody's got to bring it to television. You know, we dearly love everybody who was in Hairspray, but they're not household names.
And I mean, not the theater people. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Harvey Fierstein is really, really well known in the theater community. And that, you know, and I, you know, people are going to argue with me and say, no, he's willing. I'm telling you, he's just not.
He's not. I mean, people know him as Robin Williams' brother from Mrs. Doubtfire, or the voice of one of the – was he the dragon in Mulan? But they don't know him. I mean, they know Ariana Grande and Jennifer Hudson and Derek Huff. And they know Kristen Chenoweth a little bit. But, you know, they're not the big stars that are going to pull him in.
Well, and they weren't in the roles that needed to be to have the big pulls there. And you know, if you have a Jake Gyllenhaal come in and do something, you know, he's of that level. Wolverine's name? Well, I can't think of it.
Hugh Jackman.
So Hugh Jackman, you know, you have Hugh Jackman, you have some of these huge stars come out there and do something. And I think you're going to bring these numbers up. But do they need to bring these numbers up? 9 to 12 million? You know, if you manage your costs and you do it once a year, I think NBC would be willing to do it as a as something that differentiates the network from somebody else.
That's fair. And I think you make a very good point about the demographic that these plays to are very, very desirable to advertisers, because they are usually people who have a little bit more disposable income. But speaking of Jake Gyllenhaal, I'd be totally fine with him doing a live network television production of Sunday in the Park with George.
Yes.
Yep, totally fine with that.
Absolutely.
Good. Sold. Done.
I'm done. On. That solves the issue of his schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? I mean, you can rehearse for a few months, but although I was thinking about it, I don't know if Josh Groban has any plans for when he finishes Great Comet, but he would probably be a really good Albert in Bye Bye Birdie next year. I don't know if they've talked to him or if, you know, what's going on, but he's a really funny guy, and I think he could be a really cool Albert.
Yeah, that is a very, very good idea. All right, so let's move forward to the New York Times Best of Theater 2016. New York Times just ripping off David Cody and Adam Feldman, right?
Well, yeah, well, you know, everyone likes to make lists. But James, I teased this on yesterday's show after Hairspray Live when I was on my own. But earlier this week, the New York Times critics Ben Brantley and Charles Isherwood released their list of the best theater in New York from the calendar year. And since I haven't seen a single show in New York this year, I wanted to see what you thought of their list. I know you, I think you've looked through this list already, haven't you?
Yeah.
Okay. It included such shows as Great Comet, Taylor Max, A 24 Decade of Popular Music, Turn Me Loose, A Life, Dear Evan Hansen, which we're going to talk more about shortly, so don't spoil that, as well as Heisenberg and others. So just as a whole, I know that you, Peter, and Michael will probably do some sort of year-end kind of thing on This Week on Broadway, but what did you think of their list? Was there anything that you felt was missing? Anything that you were surprised that they included?
You know, I don't. I think it was, you know, really, it was the big things that were out there that were well talked about, things like that. I'm not sure I would have included The Encounter. I just had, you know, such of a negative experience there. Everybody should be forewarned to get your tickets to Oslo now, because it's going to be a really, really great thing.
Yeah, you mentioned that after you saw it off Broadway, that was a special one.
And you know, there's a lot of buzz about Ride the Cyclone. And interestingly enough, Peter had a Minority Report on last week's This Week on Broadway.
Yeah, he did.
He was pretty negative on Ride the Cyclone, which I was surprised to hear. But you know, what we really should be talking about here is that this is a really interesting list, but it's not as comprehensive as the Maximu podcast. Oh. The Maximu podcast they have a two-part year-end summary of discussing all the, and it encompasses Brantley and Isherwood's list, as well as all the other things that they're into. Last week's came out, this week's episode came out on Wednesday. There's a part two coming out next Wednesday. Get over to the Maximu podcast and listen to it, because not only is it really insightful and the information that you need, but it's so friggin' funny.
It's
they
hilarious.
Are so wonderful. Lindsay and Jack in Brooklyn and David Levy and
Liz.
Fuck yeah, great plays, Liz, Richard.
And Nicole, yeah.
Nicole. They are so wonderful. Listen to the Maximu podcast. It covers what we're talking about right here, plus all the extras. So next up.
Yeah, I'll take the lead. I'll intro this one, because this is about you. Over the last two nights, James, you have been catching up on seeing some of the latest Broadway openings, first with Dear Evan Hansen on Wednesday night, and then A Bronx Tale the Musical last night. You have seen both of these shows before in previous incarnations, Dear Evan Hansen at Second Stage and A Bronx Tale at Paper Mill. First off, did you notice anything about either of their respective Broadway runs that surprised you, having seen them before? Or were they pretty much, you know, fairly normal out-of-town/off-Broadway shows transferred, where they made a little tweaks here, but nothing substantive?
Fairly direct transfers. Dear Evan Hansen, you know, from Second Stage to the Broadway stage the other night at the Music Box Theater. Really just amazing, you know, and as it were, you know, it's selling really well. So I think that the general consensus in the theater community is that, and the theater audience is that, this is going to be one of the shows, to compete, for the best musical, and, some amazing performances in it. I have nothing negative to say about Dear Evan Hansen. It was really, really wonderful. I saw A Bronx Tale tonight. I liked it a little better tonight than I liked it at Paper Mill, but I still think that it's a dark horse in this race, and that they're going to have to do some amazing marketing to sell tickets to this thing. It's well received by the audience, but it's just, as I mentioned before,
familiar.
Yeah, it's sort of Jersey Boys light, and and the music is not as good, even though it's Alan Menken and
Glenn Slater.
Yeah. And but we'll see what happens with it, you know.
Yeah. The review of A Bronx Tale that really interested me came from Vox, and I don't have this this article up, so it's going to be more or less from memory. I don't remember who the critic was, but I'll put a link to it in the show notes. But the reviewer said that basically this is a show that has a ton of political undertones, and that those go back to Chaz Palminteri's original play and movie. But because this is a musical, it tries to sugarcoat those a little bit. They don't really dive into those issues all that much in the musical version of this property. But despite that, the underlying story is so strong that these little slight political stories and these political messages kind of come up. And the reviewers seem to think that if they had focused a little bit more on that rather than trying to make it a fairly bright and glitzy traditional musical, that they might have had a better success with making this something that stood out from the crowd. Does that seem fair to you, James?
It does. It's Asia Romano over at Vox.com, and the title is Retro Musical: A Bronx Tale Delivers an Indictment of American Politics Without Even Trying. So it's looking at the comparisons of what's happening today with what's happening within this musical, which is set from the 50s and 60s in New Jersey. And so if they go that route, I was sort of thinking about this when we were talking about the ratings for Hairspray, is that I wonder if everybody's just kind of a little bit burned out. So I don't know if we all need a little Christmas to regenerate our
or MAME. We need a little MAME.
Yeah,
we need some MAME.
Exactly. There we go. So, I think that is a valid point that Romano is making in his Vox review. But again, we're going to have to see how this plays out. And as I've said before, it's not the great things that make a show run. It's the marketing. You know, it's convincing people to buy the ticket before they walk in the door, because you never know what you're walking into.
Yeah.
But you have to make that impetus to set aside that time and buy that ticket and get there. I mean, we saw, it's not a great comparison because we saw Dear Evan Hansen a few months ago and decided to buy tickets to bring our kids to see Dear Evan Hansen. And the kids loved the show. And it was a very young audience at Dear Evan Hansen, the youngest audience I've seen since perhaps Wicked a number of years ago. So that was very interesting to me that the audience was so young. I would say, teens, early 20s versus, seeing, I don't know.
That's cool.
I saw something the other day. What did I see earlier this week? I saw something.
I can't keep up.
Yeah, I can't either. Let me look quickly what it was. Maybe it was The Bodyguard, a Paper Mill. What else did I see? I saw The Front Page. I saw The Front Page last week, and the audience was 60s, 70s, dare I say 80s. And that's fine too, but that's not the future of Broadway. The future of Broadway, the people seeing Dear Evan Hansen, and it was a very encouraging audience to see weeping boys and girls walking out of the theater. Dear Evan Hansen should be sponsored by Kleenex. They're missing an opportunity right there. There should be Kleenex everywhere at that theater because the whole audience is weeping. So I think that's it. And we'll talk about more of these things. I saw Michael tonight at A Bronx Tale. So and Peter talked about it last week. So I'm sure we'll talk deeper about Dear Evan Hansen and A Bronx Tale and The Bodyguard on This Week on Broadway.
Awesome.
All right, why don't you get us out of here?
All right, thanks for listening to Today on Broadway. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Broadway Radio. You can find me on Twitter at BWWMatt. And subscribe to Something I Could Pop on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
And my name is James Marino from BroadwayRadio.com and BroadwayStars.com. I'm the biggest Maximu podcast listener that's out there, so join us and listen to the Maximu podcast. Sunday, we'll be talking on This Week on Broadway. I forget who the guest is, but there'll probably be somebody there with Peter, Michael, and me. And if not, Matt and I will be back and talk with you on Monday.